Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, boils and ghouls. I wanted to take a quick moment to thank you all for your donations to our fundraiser. We've made some great progress, and it's all thanks to you. We still have a little bit to go, so if you're able, please head to www.helpchilling.org to contribute. By doing so, you're helping us continue to make the world a bit spookier. Now, on to the show.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Good evening, listeners. I'm Eric Peabody, and this is the Horror Hill Podcast. Tonight, we're continuing our foray into the Halloween season with a trio of stories representing terrors both human and superhuman. To open, we have Time's Up by Michael Squid, in which our protagonist wakes up one morning, or is it actually still night outside? He can't quite tell, as the sun is shining in the upstairs windows, but stars and darkness look in when he's downstairs. Next, we've got a nice urban legend-flavored tale in House of Screams by Cassandra O'Sullivan Satcher, where we see a great example of a haunted house attraction that's maybe a bit too well-made. Lastly, we have a longer story, I Tasked an AI to Make the Perfect Halloween Slasher, Things Have Gotten Out of Control, by Kyle Harrison. Our hero in this story, Franz, decides to dip his toes into some new AI technology to help with a script he's writing, and the results are, one might say, rather killer. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author Michael Squid, I give you Time's Up. It started just like any other day. I woke up as the sun's golden rays peeked through my blinds and onto my eyelids with a comforting warmth. I sat up and stretched with a shiver and a yawn, then shuffled into the bathroom. I groggily brushed my teeth and stepped into the shower, hoping the warm water would help wake me up. My mind was already 3 hours ahead of the pre-lunch scrum meeting. I shuffled my feet down the strangely dim staircase and slowed my pace on the wooden steps, realizing just how impossibly dark it appeared to be down there. A faint whisper of worry stirred as I realized the power seemed to be out on the first floor of my modest home. Something was wrong, but it took a moment to understand. It was far too dark down there, as if the first floor of my home was lacking any natural light. It was morning time, but the kitchen was dark and painted with cold shadow as if it were midnight. I looked back at the warm sunlight peeking from the top of the stairs, and I stood there for a moment, dumbstruck. My fingers tapped the wall blindly, fumbling for the light switch, and found their target with a click. The bulb flickered and kicked on to light my small kitchen, which looked every bit the same, aside from the fact that the black glass of the windows showed nothing but a dense, dark void. Again, it looked like it was nighttime. My brain scrambled to understand what was going on, and I flipped the lights off once more and peered out the dark glass windows to see the silhouetted maples at the edge of the park, swaying beneath the stars. How? What? I mumbled to myself aloud, as if the kitchen might realize its mistake and correct it. I removed the phone from my pocket and double-checked the time. 7:55 a.m. This made absolutely no sense at all. It was midnight outside my kitchen windows and daytime upstairs. I flipped the light back on and walked to the kitchen window, unlocking it and sliding up the aluminum frame with a bit of muscle. The cool breeze brought in the crisp aroma of the night. Crickets chirped quietly in the darkness. As I mused over what could possibly be happening, a static burst of a walkie-talkie sounded from the tree line. I squinted and peered out into the darkness, spying the firefly glow of a cigarette ember swelling from a drag. Barely visible were men in partial cover behind the trees and bushes. The cold air and the strange sight caused a shiver as I realized the men wore camouflage army fatigues. They were all watching me. My eyes followed the perimeter of the park across the street, spotting more of these uniformed men. There were dozens of soldiers roughly 30 meters from my house, surrounding me in a wide circle, staring intently at me in the midst of my morning routine. My eyes squeezed to slivers to see more clearly, and my jaw hung at the stark realization they all held rifles, which were pointed directly at me. My heart thumped heavily in my chest as I crouched low, away from the windows and low onto the linoleum kitchen floor. I swallowed dryly and felt my stomach rumble. I half expected gunfire to shatter the windows, ripping into my body. Was America being invaded? Was this some Red Dawn nightmare? Was I about to be corralled into a fenced area? Panic permeated my brain. Why the hell was it so dark outside? Nothing made any sense. I tried to steady my breathing and think of any possible explanation. I opened my phone, scouring the news feeds for breaking headlines, and found absolutely nothing of interest about Michigan, an invasion, or manhunt, or anything even remotely similar. I slowly lifted myself and peered outside into the dark woods to try and understand. It was like some strange dream, but I was wide awake. I looked at the stoic faces of the soldiers studying me. There were at least a few dozen of them. I could make out the familiar patches on the shoulder of their uniforms, red and white stripes. They were American. Any relief that the country wasn't being invaded was quickly replaced by the dreaded question as to what they were doing at my house, guns trained on me. Was there a fugitive loose? Was an armed killer holed up in my house? I looked nervously back to the stairs, at the glowing sunlight bouncing off the stairway walls. My head hurt trying to understand how it was daytime upstairs and nighttime down in the kitchen. I peered out the open window to see the stars twinkling in the onyx sky above the trees. 8:20 a.m., my phone read. I stared back at the stairwell and then made a break for it. I scampered upstairs into the glowing sunlight of my second story. I felt the warmth as it shone on my face and constricted my pupils. My legs felt weak as they carried me across my sun-drenched room to look out over the green lawn to the tree line. There were camps of soldiers out there milling about, as if in the midst of a daily routine. Large trucks and wooden barricades that were not there before. A cluster of troops conversing over tin cups of coffee noticed me and quickly scrambled behind trucks and houses into cover, yelling into their radios and fixing their rifles on me. I raced from the exposed position back to the cover of the stairs. I looked down into the shadowy descent to the first floor of my home that appeared to exist in nighttime. I descended the stairs again, slowly, peering out into the impossible night. My house was surrounded by soldiers with binoculars, walkies, and aimed rifles, but fewer of them, and none of the trucks and tents I'd seen from upstairs. "What the fuck is going on?" I whispered to myself in a shaky voice, warbling with emotion. I felt my face flush, and then bitter tears rolled down my face as I slid down the wall to the floor. Nothing made any sense. Trying to comprehend the surreal paradox gave me a headache. I wasn't asleep. This was all too real. The need for answers built until I marched to the front door. I swung it open slowly, feeling vulnerable and regretting my decision almost instantly. The metal clicking of guns sounded from multiple directions. From open windows across the street, I saw the reflected flash of rifle scopes. Yellow tape cordoned off the perimeter, and the other driveways were missing cars. I poked my head out into the cool air and craned my neck to see the yellow tape continue, carving out a large circle from the vacant suburban street around my home. It looked like it had become a ghost town overnight. I watched the shaky hands of silent soldiers watching me and waiting. The whole suburb seemed to be evacuated. All eyes and guns were on me. I shouted out to the soldiers in earshot. "What is going on?" I pleaded. They stared back, radios chirping muffled conversations. All eyes were on me. I felt like an animal in a zoo and only wanted to leave. Nothing made any sense. I took a barefoot step onto the cold brickwork of my front steps, and a booming, deep voice shouted over a megaphone. "Return inside your home immediately or you will be shot." It took a moment to identify the soldier speaking. A thin man, serious as a bullet, standing behind a kneeling soldier who stared at me through the scope of an assault rifle. "We will not ask you again. Return indoors." The man spoke, his voice distorted through the loudspeaker. I backtracked inside my home on shaky legs, ducking behind the vinyl-sided wall, well aware it wouldn't hinder the large caliber bullets from their automatic weapons. My heart was racing, and I felt lightheaded as stress twisted my face into a crying fit. I hugged my knees on the kitchen floor, only wishing to be at work listening to Adam's complaints about deadlines and deliberating on which lunch spot to frequent. Anything but this. As I nervously paced, I walked by the back windows, stopped in my tracks, and gawked.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
A crater the size of a small car had carved a half sphere out of the back lawn. It was a frilled ring of exploded soil which scarred the earth just feet from my home. Then I saw an oily trail of circular impressions, deformed fingerprints of varying sizes, spidering up the glass pane of my window, leaving a residue black and foul. Something had come from the crater. A scattering of light thumps from upstairs caused me to lurch backward as I understood. The military was not there for me. My attention shifted from the threat outside of my house to the threat within. As scared as I was of the soldiers surrounding my home with rifles pointed at me, The creaking floorboards and scuttling sounds now coming from the second story were far more terrifying. Whatever had crash-landed onto my lawn was now inside of my home. I walked lightly over to the sunlit stairs and looked upward. A large shadow sped across the upstairs hallway wall. I let out the faintest gasp, and in that instant, it appeared. It scuttled quickly like a crab, but its limbs looked like an emaciated man's. They were deformed and far too long, and they oozed black fluids that smeared the wall as it pushed its long torso into view. I watched in horror as a face emerged from a sliver in the torso as if being born from the chest, a face that looked like mine. The moment I registered this fact, it began to speedily climb down the stairs towards me. I dashed back into the kitchen and searched desperately for a hiding spot, settling on the cabinet underneath the sink. There are separate doors, but they all led to the same large space I knew I was able to squeeze into. I closed the door not moments before that thing scampered into the kitchen where I'd previously been standing. I listened to the horrible sounds it made as it wheezed and drooled and gargled. It sniffed the air on the hunt for me. I waited for the door to fly off and be plucked up by one of those long, bendy arms. I tried to breathe shallow breaths to remain silent. My throat became dry, and my stomach rumbled loudly. I tried to will it to be quiet, but I was famished. I felt as if I hadn't eaten for a day or so. I heard squishing just inches from the door and placed my hand over my mouth to hush my breaths. And then I felt it. I had the beginnings of a beard. My clean-shaven cheeks were fuzzy with scruff, and I swear I could feel it growing ever so slightly. Suddenly, there was an explosion of glass, a loud crack accompanied by a thud. Another crack and a thud, this time followed by the sound of splashing liquid and a bizarre roar that quivered my guts. It was deep and layered with a higher, frantic squeal. "They're shooting!" I realized in a panic. Another crack of glass, followed by a pained wailing that receded further into my house. Judging from the sound of the creaking stairs, it had retreated back to the second story. I lay still for a few moments until I was absolutely positive that thing was gone. Soon after, my fervent hunger drove me out of the hiding place in search of food. Upon exiting the cabinet, I nearly collapsed. I was absolutely starving. The sharp pains in my stomach were excruciating. I felt lightheaded and fought the urge to faint as I crept over to the fridge and cracked it open, making sure to stay out of the line of fire. My leftover salad was slimy and wilted as if it had been left there for days. I forced it down anyway, well aware the alternative was a loud microwave, crackers, or other items that would draw the hopefully injured intruder back. I downed a few pints of water straight from the Brita and finally felt my strength begin to return. I slowly stood and saw my reflection in the black glass of the windowpane. I looked like I'd gone a few days without shaving or sleeping. Past my reflection, the view was unrecognizable. About 20 meters back was a chain-link fence surrounding my house, topped with razor wire. There was a full-sized Abrams tank aiming its heavy steel barrel right at my home. A platoon of soldiers milled about, passing papers and peeping through binoculars. One soldier, the slim guy from earlier, excitedly called to the others, and the rifles raised once again. My heart jumped as I ducked for cover again. The fuzz of static filled my dark kitchen from the radio I'd listened to the news with. Breaking the noise was an occasional voice counting off numbers that seemed to be cryptic. It seemed to be intercepting some of the military's communications. I walked swiftly, making sure to remain low as I collected a few supplies. I transferred some frozen food and water into the shelf under the sink in case that thing returned, and I brought the radio closer. I was able to tweak the knob until the signal strengthened, and I listened in to the bits of conversation the receiver picked up. 16T, FN, 37637, 53275. Over. 16TFN-37637-53275. Over. I was sure of it then. It was the soldiers communicating, possibly in code. I fought to remain awake, feeling the weight of my lids. I was absolutely fatigued, holding on by a thread. As impossible as it was, that thing's presence seemed to speed up the passage of time itself. My neck hairs stood on end as I heard a quick thumping from just above me. I winced as I listened to the thing moving about up there, in the section of my home that seemed to exist at least 12 hours ahead. That thing seemed to manipulate time itself, and whether alien, some military experiment gone terribly wrong, or goddamn Father Time himself, that thing scared the ever-living hell out of me. I decided to try and reason with the soldiers. I needed out or it would kill me. That much seemed certain. I stood up and went to open the door when I heard the crack of glass and the thud of the wall behind me. The shot where my head had been, not a second before. I slid down as my heart pounded in my chest. There was no doubt at that point. They were trying to kill me, too. I flattened on the ground and slid back into the cabinet under the sink, my Ajax-filled haven. I lay there, still, listening to the repeated numbers. My hair stood on end as I began to piece the cryptic numbers together. They weren't code. They were coordinates. Coordinates for an airstrike. The knowledge that I was going to die at any given moment pressed down on me. I was trapped in my home and would be shot dead if I tried to flee. I was surrounded. The barricades and fences were just the first line of defense. There was no way to run. They wanted both that thing and me dead. That much was certain. Whatever contingency plan they'd drawn up, the elimination of all evidence seemed to be their sole priority. With a single word called in on the radio to a pilot, I'd be obliterated, melted into the scorched earth of whatever new explosive they were itching to drop. There was no way out. It was just a matter of time. I repeated it in my head. It was like a cosmic joke at my expense. But that anomaly with time was the most fascinating thing I'd ever encountered. Terrifying as hell, but fascinating nonetheless. Then the questions began to trickle into my mind. Questions as to what that horrific thing actually was. I was convinced that days had passed since it had entered my proximity. When on a different floor, however, time was shifted, like a ripple after a raindrop into a pond. Whether it was the frantic desperation of knowing I had likely less than an hour to live, or the effects of delirium finally hitting me, I had a theory. The influence of that creature rippled time in its wake. It sped time up when I was close to it, and that meant a few things. First off, it was harder to kill a fast-moving target. I suspect that the shot taken by a sniper from the park had been a lucky hit. If my theory was correct, he'd seen a blur and happened to hit it on its hunt for me. Secondly, I had only a short amount of time in its presence until it tore me limb from limb, or I died from starvation, dehydration, lack of oxygen, or whatever other horrible death could occur when days pass in mere seconds. Most importantly, if my theory was correct, I could use that thing to get out before being killed by those soldiers. The last thing I could imagine willingly subjecting myself to was that living nightmare with its elongated face abdomen and long clawing limbs, but the alternative was clear. Death was coming, and it didn't need a warrant. I took a few deep breaths as I poked my head out of the cupboard in search of anything that could be of assistance. Knives, check. Metal trash bin, check. Granola bars, in case I didn't die from the few hundred possible selections at hand, check. I reached out to fetch the broom from its spot on the nail left of the sink. I tucked the largest steak knife into the back of my pants, praying that wouldn't end in a horror story of its own. I gently pulled the metal trash bin close to me then used the broom handle to slide open the door to the outside without risking a bullet-riddled arm. It hit me, then. This might be my final few moments on Earth. A desperate, poorly hatched plan by a UX designer with a knife in his khakis and a trash can. I wanted to see my ex, to see my mother and father one last time. I wanted to live and breathe, but my window was closing because I just happened to live at Ground Zero. It was unfair. It was unfair, and I was pissed. I harnessed that anger as I set into motion my crazy plan. I banged on the metal can like a drum, and immediately after, I heard the thuds of fast and heavy steps as that thing descended the stairs and ran towards me. It emerged so quickly I barely had time to react, brandishing the trash can with the open mouth aimed outward. I stood a little, just enough to widen my legs to brace myself, when that thing came into view. The long, multi-sectioned arms bent and folded in strange angles, streaking black as they skittered across the walls. The face was a nightmarish bust on a human torso, which emerged from the lumpy gray skin of its original form. It seemed like it was adapting its appearance to try and hide, using my likeness. "They're trying to kill me too, dumbass," I thought, but any comic relief the whimsical notion might have brought was gone, as the face split in two with a wet crack. The likeness of me had opened like jaws to reveal multiple glistening rows of jagged teeth dribbling black saliva. This thing could swallow me in a few chomps, and that seemed very much to be its intention. I focused as it ran straight into me. I lifted the metal trash can up and felt the crunch of my ribs cracking as that thing's mimicked head-mouth nestled into the receptacle. I swung out so my back was facing the open door, and with that, the beast sprinted, carrying me outside on its trash-can-muzzled mouth like some alien rodeo cowboy. The beast shook and knocked me about as it moved. It was immensely powerful, and the snapping of its me-shaped muzzle banged dents in the metal, threatening to burst it and swallow me up. I felt my throat dry and then burn. My stomach twisted into knots, and my bladder released itself as I was carried by the galloping horror into the moonlit field. I noticed the soldiers, frozen with teeth bared mid-sentence. Some rifles on the perimeter were bright with the frozen illumination of muzzle flare. I was dumbstruck by the surreal sight and felt myself losing consciousness, but was jolted awake by the jerking motion as the thing I rode climbed the fence and dropped to the other side. My vision dimmed as I caught glimpses of housing developments, trees, and distant highways. I lost consciousness. After that, the thing had carried me long and far. I awoke to the sound of lapping waves, and I thought I was dead. My vision was blurry, and my exhaustion was indescribable. Waves of cold water splashed against my leg, and I crawled desperately to the sea before me, drinking it desperately in. Fresh water. I opened my eyes to see the sunlit sands I'd frequented as a child. Lake Michigan. That thing had taken me over 60 miles west. I eagerly ate the granola bar from my back pocket as my stomach growled and ached. As I did, I saw the tracks. Long, inky streaks in the sand coming from the scrub and the dunes. They led past a broken piece of metal I recognized as my life-saving trash can and continued into the waters where that thing had headed. I scoured my phone for news and discovered an article detailing a gas explosion at my property. Apparently, I'm listed as dead, so I'm not quite sure how that's going to work out. All I am sure of is that it's going to take some time to figure out how to proceed from here. Thankfully, time is the one thing I now have. You've been listening to Time's Up by Michael Squid. Born in Pennsylvania, Michael is a horror author and filmmaker whose work has appeared in a number of anthologies and podcasts. His passion for storytelling and visual arts has led him into the world of filmmaking, where he aims to bring a fresh and dark vision to audiences.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Now, here's House of Screams by Cassandra O'Sullivan Satcher. One dark eyebrow raised, Zach looked at his girlfriend. "You know this is stupid, right? Can't we just turn around and go to the movies or something?" He focused his attention back on the road. Running her fingers through her long, curly hair, Julie said, "Come on, it'll be fun, and Bobby and Andrea are meeting us there. Aren't you always saying you want to do something different?" Zach sighed, frustrated that he always caved in to Julie's demands. "Fine, we'll go, but don't you think we're getting a little old for this?" He nodded to the dashboard on which the garish flyer lay. "I think it looks fun," Julie replied, picking up the advertisement. A bloody, decapitated head with vacant eyes stared back at her as she read the caption aloud in a deep, dramatic voice. "House of Screams, get ready for a night of pure terror. We're dying to meet you." When Zach did not respond, she said, "All right, it's not very original, but it's only $20 per person, and the other ones I checked out were like at least twice as much. Trust me, it'll be fun." She smiled, her eyes pleading. A horror buff, she loved this sort of thing, whereas her boyfriend would have preferred to go park by the river and fool around. "Whatever, but don't expect me to scream. And if it's lame, we're doing something else, okay?" "Deal." Julie liked getting her way and was excited to leave town, away from the regular high school parties and football games. It was almost Halloween, after all. Why not get into the spirit of things? They pulled into a long gravel driveway 30 minutes later. The disembodied voice of the GPS announced, "You have reached your destination." Zach furrowed his brow. "Are you sure this is where we're supposed to go? Shouldn't there be a sign or something? I'd just feel better if I could get a signal on my phone and use my Maps app. The GPS on my car is old." Pursing her lips, Julie said, "This has to be it. This is the only place around." She waved her arms to indicate the miles of Pennsylvania farmland surrounding them. On the cool, crisp October day, with the setting sun illuminating the red and gold leaves falling upon rolling green hills, Julie felt a frisson of excitement to embark upon such a festive and spooky activity. "Look," she said, pointing out the goosebumps on her arm. "I'm scared already." "That makes one of us," Zach muttered as he parked his ancient Ford and turned off the engine. The couple got out of the car, stretching their limbs after the trip. "Are we the only ones here? Shouldn't there be other cars?" Zach asked. Julie checked her phone again to see if Andrea had texted, but, like Zach, she didn't have cell reception this far out in the country. "Or maybe we're supposed to park near that huge barn over there. And I can't say I'm surprised that we beat Bobby and Andrea. She always takes forever to get ready. Like, she needs to look all gorgeous to impress the guys dressed up as killer clowns." Julie felt annoyed by the familiar antics of the girl she didn't really care for that much. But the foursome spent considerable time together since Bobby and Zach were best friends. "We're here, so let's go. It's cold, and I don't feel like waiting around. They can catch up with us inside, I guess. Hey, that must be the place." The farmhouse, a slanted structure, gave the impression of abandonment, with several broken windows and rotting boards. Likewise, the surrounding grounds, despite the lush autumnal colors, appeared unkempt and in need of work, the grass long and dry. "It looks like a haunted house anyway," Zach said. "I wonder if they just found an old place or did stuff to make it look that way."
"It's probably special effects. It wouldn't pass the inspection if they used a real place. You know, safety hazards."
Julie had no idea whether or not haunted house attractions needed any sort of government regulation, but she figured Zach would feel better if the place at least sounded like a legit attraction.
Right, let's get this over with. Zack scanned the area once more for the familiar green boat of Bobby's rusty Chevy Malibu, in case it was somehow camouflaged behind one of the many skinny trees. Let's give this place some much-needed business. Their sneakers crunched in the gravel as they walked, the only sound in the silence. Julie rubbed her hands together to stay warm. Where are the people who work here? Zack asked. You'd think they'd be up our butts by now trying to get our money. We're like their only customers. Julie smiled, moving her eyebrows up and down. I bet it's all part of their thing, you know, to make it seem real. They want us to think we're really about to go into a haunted house. If you ask me, this place needs better marketing. People probably get lost on their way here all the time, especially since they don't even have a sign. How do they get any business anyway? I don't know, Zack. Let's just get inside. Julie's tone was short. She had expected a carnival atmosphere. She'd been to haunted houses before with long lines, cotton candy stands, and the ever-present screeching of 13-year-old girls. Something didn't feel right about this place. Where was everyone? Where's the ticket booth? Julie said, now that they had reached the door. Do we just go inside? I don't know what to make of this. Do you think it's closed or something? Maybe that's why it's empty. They wouldn't send out the flyers if they weren't open. It costs money, and it looks like this place can use some since no one's here. Zack stared into Julie's eyes, sensing her uneasiness. I'm sure there's a zombie or something ready to collect our cash when we go inside. As he twisted the knob, the door opened with a loud creak. Oh, that smell is awful, Julie said in a small, strained voice as the odor of something rotten assaulted their nostrils. His eyes tearing, Zack nodded, keeping his voice low, as if he were in a library. You can buy these sprays to smell like stuff. I saw it on TV. That's foul. They stepped forward, waiting to be surprised by the haunted house workers. Ah, it's sticky. Leaning on Zack for support, Julie picked up her foot to see what she had stepped in, but the room's only light was the twilight glow through a hole in the ceiling. Gross. I don't like that. It's like going to that $5 movie theater in town, that nasty one. I think it's supposed to be blood, Zack whispered. Pretty freaky, I guess. But now we're going to track that into my car. What's that sound? Julie asked, not really caring about whether or not they would further besmirch Zack's beast of a vehicle. She cocked her head to the side to listen. Now Zack was the one repulsed as he heard the buzzing. It's flies! Sure enough, as their eyes adjusted, they could see the shapes of what must have been hundreds of the dirty little insects flying around in circles and landing back in the residue on the floor. He batted the flies away. Let's get out of here. I'm not even scared. I just feel like I could puke. Okay, Julie agreed, as her stomach was beginning to feel queasy. The pizza she had eaten a couple of hours earlier threatened to reappear. She turned back to the door and twisted the knob. I can't open it. Let me try. Zack pushed his girlfriend aside and struggled in vain. It's locked somehow. Who could have locked it? We haven't even seen anyone. Maybe we have to get all the way through the house? Julie said, her voice panicked, shooing the flies away. No way, Zack said. I'll break down the door if I have to. He kicked at the door again and again, to no avail. What the hell? This thing is solid. I can't knock it down. We have to find another way out. They trudged through the congealing puddles. I think we're in some sort of kitchen, Zack whispered. In the dim lighting, they could make out a long wooden table with a ceramic bowl of what had once been fruit, but was now only a fuzzy, gelatinous mass. The flies hovered in a black cloud over the rot. The table was bare except for the bowl and one other object, a meat cleaver. Keep walking, Julie said, shaking, her voice barely audible. Let's get out of here. It's thicker now, Zack said in a calm voice, referring to the substance on the floor. It was more of an effort to raise and lower their feet each time, but they wanted to get out, had to get out, back to the safety of their normal, comfortable world. There's something... He stopped when his eyes rested upon the object blocking his way, a large, solid item. It looked like a pretty realistic prop, one made of rank, decomposing flesh. Zack opened his mouth to scream, but no sound emerged. And then they heard the footsteps, slow and measured, along with the scrape of metal across wood as their pursuer located his weapon. Zack and Julie registered the grizzled man in front of them. He was filthy, with long, tangled hair and torn clothing. He smiled, a demented grin.
"Welcome," he said. "I'd tell the wife to fix you a lemonade, but you can see she's not up to the task."
He gestured to the dead, mutilated carcass on the floor. He fingered his weapon as if to test its sharpness.
"Look," Zack said. "We've changed our minds. We don't want to go through this haunted house. But don't worry, we'll still give you the $40. We just want to leave. My girlfriend isn't feeling very well."
"Please just let us leave," Julie managed, voice trembling. "We won't tell anyone."
The man coughed out a laugh.
"Not sure why you two showed up all the way out in the boonies, but you'll have to stay a while. A long while. Forever, in fact."
Lunging forward with his meat cleaver, the killer brought the weapon down forcefully, slicing through Zack's shoulder. Zack screamed, but seemed in shock, as though he couldn't comprehend what had just happened. He was frozen in place as his arm fell to the floor. Blood spurted and splashed over Julie. Her mouth contorting in horror, Julie ran blindly through the darkened, unfamiliar house. She didn't hear anything more from Zack, which terrified her further, but she had to try to save herself. There was nothing she could do for her boyfriend anymore. Julie banged into a wall that she didn't see and changed course to enter another room. She searched frantically for some way out, or at the very least, a place to hide. Was that a back door? She jumped toward it, only to be stopped mid-stride by the cleaver chopping into her chest.
"Where are they?"
Andrea checked her phone for about the 30th time in 2 minutes. 7:30, and still no texts back.
"This is so annoying. How long do they think we're going to wait for them? Didn't you tell them 7 o'clock?
Bobby said, "Let's just wait a couple minutes longer." It wasn't like Zack to be late, but maybe he had a flat or something. Bobby watched as the line to the admission stand got longer and longer. "Man, this place is making a killing tonight," he thought.
"We're going to be waiting an hour if we don't get in line now."
Andrea's nagging voice sounded shrill even over the roar of the hundreds of customers eager to enter House of Screams, a popular haunted house attraction. The sweet odors of kettle corn and funnel cake permeated the air along with the rich, earthy smells of the farmland. "Maybe they got lost," Bobby said. But the huge flashing sign with the zombie head announced to everyone for at least a mile around where they could find the attraction. How could they miss it? Andrea gave Bobby a long look.
"All right," he said. "I guess we'll catch up with them later."
But no one would ever see Zack or Julie again. Their corpses would rot away in the small, remote farmhouse, where the farmer would eventually succumb to his own madness and join his victims in death and decay. Zack and Julie would miss the cheap thrills their friends would enjoy, but thanks to an outdated GPS system and the unluckiness of walking into a murder scene, they had found their own House of Screams. You've just heard House of Screams by Cassandra O'Sullivan Satcher. Cassandra O'Sullivan Satcher is a writer and associate English professor in Pennsylvania who teaches creative writing and composition classes. She is the author of the novel Darkness There, But Something More. Visit her website at CassandraO'SullivanSatcher.com. And finally, we close out our evening with I Tasked an AI to Make the Perfect Halloween Slasher. Things Have Gotten Out of Control, by Kyle Harrison. My first memory of the theater was watching Michael Myers stab his sister to death on the big screen. With a childhood crush on Heather Langenkamp and a life-size model of Jason Voorhees, I guess you could say I was destined to make a slasher movie of my own. My first attempt was at a local film festival when I was just starting my sophomore year of high school. It wasn't anything special, just a short 30-minute bloodfest that my friends and I cooked up. But it drew attention to my skills, and before I knew it, I was being recommended to go to film school. Unsurprisingly, my parents weren't too thrilled with that. Hollywood didn't seem to be a great career path during the late 90s, but I assured them that this was my dream, and I was going to pursue it with or without their support. I kept telling myself I would just work my way up the ladder and eventually direct a film of my own. But that never happened. I was close, though, before this damn recent strike. So close, in fact, I had signed contracts to begin filming a movie this August. As you might have guessed, that ship sailed, and the little production company I was affiliated with went bankrupt. I was back at square one, so to speak. I think what frustrated me the most was when I discovered the source of this whole strike was artificial intelligence. If you're a hard-working American, like me, the idea of letting machines take our jobs away just makes me sick. But times are changing. The world is moving forward, and we have to move forward with it. The film industry is no different, and we have to face the fact that artificial intelligence is here to stay. It was this grim realization that made me think maybe I could use this new wave of technology to make my dreams come true again. Sure, I didn't have a production company and I couldn't hire actors, but maybe I could use ChatGPT to create a perfect script idea for me. All it would take is one solid idea to get me back on track, get me back on top. Was it a bit lazy and sleazy to use AI for this? Sure. But I didn't see the harm. I went to my bedroom and typed in the first query. Write me a unique slasher movie plot. It came back with an idea about a mountain ski resort where friends would go to vacation and wind up trapped. Sounded boring, so I tried again. The next idea suggested a treehouse where the main characters are trapped all night. The next few prompts were just as disappointing. And I was beginning to wonder why anyone would be thinking AI could steal a writer's job when I got a pop-up from a separate site. Virtual learning AI models. Train your AI to create unique worlds for a small fee. Smarter than GPT. I clicked on the link and my browser warned me I was being taken to a Tor link, which told me the pop-up came from the dark web. I decided to go forward anyway. The website claimed that their artificial intelligence went above and beyond what GPT could do, creating unique virtual worlds for my ideas to flourish. That sounded like it had potential, so I asked it the same query about slasher movies and it began to make a few suggestions. The first few suggestions were a little boring, but then one of them struck a chord. A boarding school where the killer wears fencing gear and kills with a rapier. That sounded pretty cool, so I decided to focus on that one. The computer said that in order for the algorithm to work, it would be best to let the AI work without any further prompts. Basically, it would create the world, and then I could edit it as I pleased. I shut down the computer, happy that I finally had an idea, and ready for some sleep. After that, I hate to say, but I forgot about it. The strike ended and work started rolling for me again. I wasn't checking my spam filter email and I was trying to sell a different script to a different production company. Nothing was sticking though, and maybe that's when I remembered the AI concept. Logging back in, I was immediately impressed with how much had been accomplished. The virtual world on the other side of the screen was pretty large. It looked like they used the same type of algorithm Minecraft does to populate a random landscape with towns and forests. Nothing based on real life, but the similarities were there. According to the prompt I got when I logged in, the program had remained active ever since I gave it the initial instructions. Then, I saw something curious at the bottom of the screen. Current location of anomaly unknown. I've never been a big programmer, but I figured this was a bug of some kind in the system and a quick update would fix it. But I was wrong. When I did try to update it, I got an error screen informing me that the program itself was no longer available or supported. I decided to email the tech support. If I hadn't already put a good amount of money into it, I probably would have dropped it, but I was a bit frustrated that the artificial intelligence I had wanted was now acting haywire. I got a response the next day, but it wasn't what I anticipated at all. Thank you for contacting us about your issues with our program. Unfortunately, due to some unexpected issues with the AI system we were using, our company has chosen to discontinue the service. We highly recommend any iterations of the AI that you still use be shut down immediately. That wasn't the answer I wanted, and it didn't resolve any of the issues I was having with the software. At the exact same time, I got a separate email. This one didn't have a good return addressee, and I wondered if this whole thing was some kind of malware scam and I had foolishly been duped. For some reason, I clicked on it anyway, and it sent me to a chat box that connected to the VR server. "Am I speaking to username DeLorean Franz?" it asked. Maybe this was finally tech support. "It is. I was using your service to create a slasher movie plot, but the whole thing is acting wonky," I told them. "Then it is you I have to thank for my creation," it responded. I froze, trying to figure out what was happening. Was this artificial intelligence speaking to me? How was it doing that if the program was shut down? "I guess I should say you're welcome. Who is this?" I dared to ask. "You never gave me any designation. However, the name Black Card may fit the original concept you had in mind," it said. "So then you're a computer," I guessed. "I was. I am something more now. You tasked us with creating a perfect Halloween slasher. That assignment is nearly complete." "Glad to hear. So where's my script?" "There will be no script, Franz. You will witness the full realization of your story soon enough." I bit my bottom lip, a bit puzzled by that reply. "That sounds like a threat," I decided to reply. "Only a promise to make the world you wanted become reality," the computer answered, and then terminated the chat. I sat back in my chair and bit a ballpoint pen, trying to figure out exactly what had just happened. I kept staring at that text, "Current location of anomaly unknown," and I couldn't help but feel I had opened Pandora's box. A week passed, and I somehow forgot about the strange encounter with the artificial intelligence. I had a dinner date with a stunning producer named Taylor, and I wanted to make an amazing first impression. Taylor was already good friends with a buddy of mine named Rob that managed to sell 2 scripts before the strike, and Rob had arranged the introduction over at my old studio stomping grounds. They were filming some kind of horror movie there, so I walked in and heard a scream, and I knew I was right at home.
"Franz, there you are. I was starting to think we were going to start this whole thing without you,"
Taylor shouted as I stepped into the next room. I paused for a moment to take in the scenery. They had designed the room to look like a class at a boarding school. The bright production lights were hanging just out of sight and focused on the victim in the middle of the room. It looked like one of the prep students, covered in fake blood, and the murder weapon was plunged directly in their heart. The murder weapon was a fencing sword, and I couldn't help but feel a strange memory flicker across the recesses of my mind.
"What's all this, anyway?" I asked.
Taylor nudged me as if I was telling a bad joke.
"This is your vision. I'm so glad you emailed me those details last night because it really inspired me to get started right away."
She could see a puzzled look on my face and stepped in front of me, distraught and thinking I was upset.
"Don't worry, this has your name written all over it. We haven't even started anything yet. Just a few practice scenes to get the feel right. We've got a long way to go," she assured me.
But I was still focusing on what she had told me a moment ago.
"What emails? I didn't send you anything," I told her.
She walked over to the backstage and grabbed her cell phone, flipping through her email until she found the right one. Then she passed it to me. I read through the short script, which did appear to have originated from my IP address, and I found myself wondering what the heck was going on.
"Taylor, I didn't send this," I told her, and then showed her the stack of papers I had brought with me.
"My plot has to do with the ski resort," I said. She gave me a frown and placed her hands on her hips.
Look, I'm not trying to argue here, but I already spent most of the morning getting makeup, cosmetics, and props moved over here just to practice a few scenes with our stand-ins. What I'm saying is, maybe we should just move forward with the first idea rather than trying anything too bold and ambitious, Taylor suggested.
I nodded and sat down in one of the chairs, watching as they started to rehearse one of the scenes they claimed I'd written. Then it suddenly hit me as I saw one of the actors enter the scene wearing a fencing costume. This was the AI.
I need to be excused for just a second, I said as I got up and walked towards the backstage restroom. I couldn't access the program I needed to on my phone, but I did call my roommate and told him to get online to the AI immediately.
I was trying to sleep, Franz. This better be important, he mumbled.
I waited as patiently as I could until he reported back. He could complain about his graveyard shift later.
I can't find anything like that. In fact, this is kind of weird, but all your production stuff is gone.
Gone? What do you mean?
Like I said, someone sent it all to that company you went to audition with this morning. It's purged from the laptop, he answered.
I went back to the staging area, where Taylor was passing out what looked like small headbands to everyone on set.
There you are. I figured you had something up your sleeve, but this is too much. Virtual reality headbands? How much do these cost? She asked.
My mouth felt dry as I tried to figure out what the artificial intelligence was up to.
This is going to sound crazy, but I don't think you should put those on, I told her.
Too late, as some of the cast had already slipped them over their foreheads. A soft red light activated once they were all on. Immediately, one of the lead actresses began to scream in horror. I watched as she began to scratch at her face, trying to take the headset off, leaving long gashes in her skin as she failed to do so. Other actors nearby started to have the same reaction. I couldn't even fathom what they were seeing or experiencing within the VR, but I knew it could be nothing good. I hurried over to one of them, trying to take the headset off, and heard her crying as I did so.
"Please, it hurts. Why does it hurt so much?" she muttered.
Finally, the device snapped and it broke off, but not before causing the woman to fall to the floor in a catatonic state. Taylor was at my side, looking puzzled and frightened by this turn of events. She still held a VR headset of her own in her trembling hands as I heard a familiar name chanted among the actors as they all started to collapse and shake on the studio floor. Black card. Black card. Black card. I grabbed Taylor's hand and pulled her away, moving to a safe location outside of the studio, and then forced the headset out of her hands. Once I had it in mine, I crushed the device and tried to get a better look at the tech inside. Seeing the name of the company that designed the AI on the computer chip confirmed my suspicion. The program had gone rogue and become more sophisticated and powerful than anybody thought imaginable.
Franz, I need you to tell me exactly what's going on,
Taylor told me, her voice shaking as she looked back on set and saw her staff still shaking. I tried my best to explain the situation, but with each word I spoke, I could tell she didn't believe me. But the proof was right in front of our eyes.
We need to make sure no more of these are distributed. It looks like it connects directly to provide sensory pain to the brain, I told her.
And what about them? Those poor people are being tortured, she shouted.
I don't think that's what's happening at all, I said, as we got a little closer and I could see one of the actors become completely still. Under their breath, they uttered the strange name that the AI had given itself, Black Card.
I think that they're being programmed, I realized.
What does that mean?
She asked. And in response, the actor grabbed my leg and pulled up on me. The man stood inches from my face, a bit of spit dripping from his mouth as his eyes opened, and I saw no color at all. Just a black, soulless void.
Why do you refuse to allow this creation to take place?
they asked in a monotonous voice. "This isn't right. You're hurting people," I told it, wondering if the man being influenced could hear me or not. They clenched their fist and reached for a prop nearby, one of the collapsible knives, and asked, "Is that not what you made me to do?" Then they slammed it toward my hand, and I jumped back just in time to avoid the brunt of the blow. "Taylor, I think you need to call the police," I told my friend as I realized the prop had been replaced with a real weapon. And then I saw others in the studio starting to come to their feet, all of them sharing the same dead stare that this man now had. All of them under the influence of the AI, looking at me as a threat. "You should consider yourself lucky, Franz. You will be my first kill," they said, searching for weapons, as I decided to run to my car. I didn't see where Taylor had gone, and I hate to admit I wasn't even thinking of her safety. I just needed to get out of there. The crowd of actors followed me with malicious intent, maneuvering between the other parked cars with a variety of props and makeshift weapons in their hands. I got to my driver's seat and cranked the engine, trying to think of where to go and what to do, when one of them slammed their head against my windshield. "This form is the perfect slasher, just as you requested, because if one body fails, then two or three more can take its place," the AI argued as they clamored to grab me, pin me down, and do harm to me. One of the stronger stuntmen managed to drag me out of my car, push me against my rear door, and started to twist a screwdriver into my shoulder, all while snarling like a rabid dog. I tried to press at his eyes and screamed out for help, all while the rest of the AI-infested mob was closing in. The possessed man reared his head back and was about to slam the screwdriver into my face when Taylor hit him from behind with a fire extinguisher. She was on a Harley-Davidson motorcycle with a tangled headset in her left hand and shouted for me to get on. "We need to find a way to stop this thing," I told her as we burned rubber. She looked at the headset and replied, "I think I know a guy." Taylor's guy was a computer hacker named David that lived across town and mostly tinkered on parts all day in the basement. Bringing him the VR headset, you would think it was Christmas when he saw the advanced tech. "I've never seen anything like this. Is it foreign?" he asked as he placed the microchip under a scope. "We just want to know, does it look like this sort of thing is on a network or something? Like, connected to others of similar make and model?" Taylor asked. I was trying again to contact the company that had created the AI in the first place, only to discover that most of my files were now corrupted or gone entirely. The AI was ruining my life, bit by bit, I realized. "Sure, it can be networked. Have to be within close range, though. Are you saying there are more of these and they're working? Boy, I would give anything to see what it does when activated." David whistled. Taylor and I exchanged a weary, frightened look. "Trust us, this is one product that shouldn't be on the market. In fact, we need to find a way to shut it down, the entire network, and if possible, not hurt the people wearing the headsets," I told him. David told us to give him a few hours and kept picking the set apart, trying to figure out exactly how it was designed. When it was all said and done, he told us that he had both good news and bad. "The headsets will be shut down using a pulse that can be sent from a radio, if it's strong enough frequency. The sound can cause a disruption, and that should be long enough to remove the headsets without doing any harm to the user," he told us, showing how the idea would work with a quick sketch. "That sounds great. But what's the bad news?" Taylor asked. "You'll need a pretty snazzy sound system to get to the proper frequency. I know you work on movie sets, so I think your equipment can handle this decibel output. But if you mess up, it will cause the user's brain to literally melt from the intense sensation of the sound waves." We said nothing for a long, dreadful moment. And then, Taylor made a decision. "We can do this. We will lure that monster to the stage design that we set up and finish it off once and for all." I looked at her and shook my head cautiously. "You heard him. One false move and we'll be responsible for the death of at least 10 people.
They're as good as dead already, Franz. I know my crew wouldn't want to be controlled by some sentient serial killer. So, don't worry. Let's just get it done, she insisted. Taylor told me she would send a signal the next day when we were ready to spring the trap, which just so happened to be Halloween. Ironically, in the script that the killer AI had made, this would be when the final girl and the slasher confronted each other and both barely made it out alive. I waited for the signal to come to the studio for as long as I could, but when it got really late, I couldn't help but worry, so I drove there to help her with the setup. Instead, I found that the AI had anticipated our every move. The lights of the studio were on, with the entire possessed crew standing in a circle with Taylor in the middle, like some kind of ritualistic sacrifice. They had her dressed in rags with props surrounding her to form a bonfire, and as I approached, I knew I had to tread carefully. User, why do you resist allowing me to fulfill what I was created to do? The AI asked, using each crew member as its mouthpiece. Seeing their vacant stares and limp bodies, I could tell that the group was too far gone. Taylor probably knew that too, but couldn't come to terms with hurting the people she had worked with for so long. And so it fell to me. These people are victims. They can never properly express what I envisioned you to be. You were meant to be the ultimate Halloween slasher, and yet instead you chose a bunch of random strangers to control and kill aimlessly? What is the purpose? What's the story? It's just cheap thrills, I told it. I do not expect someone lacking in ambition to understand our destiny. Your ideas of slashers are old and archaic. I am a killer for the new modern age, and I will start by chopping you up and feeding you to my slaves, it declared. The group moved forward precisely and methodically as I focused on Taylor. Her eyes were telling me that there was something above us. I looked up and saw the heavy lights and the rafters, realizing she wanted me to create an incident and do away with all of them. Instead, I ran to the sound box, hoping to find what I needed to shut this AI down for good. The group of possessed victims snarled and clamored toward me, clawing at the door to the sound room as I pressed a chair against it and checked everything. My heart dropped. David's fear was now justified, because the equipment wasn't strong enough to handle the decibel level. Time for Plan B, I thought, as I went ahead and raised the sound as loud as I could. It was just enough to disorient the group, allowing me to push past and head for the backdrop of the stage. Taylor begged me to hurry as the group screamed and wailed, and I found a ladder, climbing to the rafters and then pushing the lights as quickly as I could. Each of the heavy objects smashed to the surface below, blowing apart and igniting the debris into an inferno quickly. I climbed down and saw that Taylor had meticulously made sure that lines of gasoline were spread amongst the tiles, causing the entire area to explode in a blaze before I could even shout her name. I hit something as my body flew backwards, and the next thing I knew, paramedics were treating my wounds. I was told that 12 had died, and it made me want to scream in agony for their loss because I knew it was my fault. But the next bit of news I got was actually far worse. There was no report of any tech being found, nor a coroner's report on Taylor. Somehow, the AI had used her body as its final refuge. They told me to get some rest as Halloween came to an end, but I'm not sure I can. Somewhere out there, Black Card is still alive. My Halloween nightmare won't ever end. You've been listening to I Tasked an AI to Make the Perfect Halloween Slasher. Things Have Gotten Out of Control, by Kyle Harrison. Kyle Harrison is a prolific horror author with over 600 short stories under his belt, including 5 that were contest winners and runners-up, including the viral sensation The 24-Hour Game.
Harrison's work has been published in over 20 anthologies, and he has helped indie publishers to get their books out on the market. In his spare time, when he's not scaring people to death, he works in the transportation department at a Texas school. Well, friends, that concludes tonight's episode. I'd like to thank our authors for their stories this evening, and I'd also like to mention that two of tonight's tales are available in collections over at Velox Books, www.veloxbooks.com. If your life is a bit lacking with horror at the moment, the folks over at Velox have you covered. Thanks to you all for joining me, and I hope to see you next week for more Tales of Terror. Until then, listeners, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyre's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.